Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Approaching the holidays in what was, once upon a time, a lull in the news calendar, we have plenty to discuss. Among the topics today, an ongoing and expanding investigation into election fraud in the 9th Congressional District, and Apple takes its expansion elsewhere. Jason DeBruin, data reporter for WUNC, is on the line from Chapel Hill, here to digest some of this. Hey, Jason, how are you?
Jeff, this is North Carolina. You think we're going to have a dull moment? Come on.
Now, briefly, side tangent as we get going, there is a reporter in the Capitol Press Corps, Gary Robertson, Associated Press, who has been in this game for going back almost 20 years, and he talks about November and December and January. I won't use the Q word, but they used to be less busy times around here. And I'll use the Q word. We haven't had a quiet stretch in really a couple of years now. This used to be a quiet time. It's just not anymore. You and I are too young to have experienced that, I think.
Yeah, maybe so. That's one of the few times I've ever been called too young, I suppose. No, but it's a great point. I mean, you normally have a little bit of a lull in the cycle here, but especially now as you have a lame duck session coming out, right? I mean, that's impactful, particularly when you talk about the House and Senate both having supermajorities as currently constructed. They won't have that here in, you know, however many days.
17.
So, right. So, you know, if you're a member that is leaving or a member of the party that currently holds the supermajority but is going to lose the supermajority, certainly you're politically motivated to, you know, get some stuff done. And then, of course, add on top of that, you have Silent Sam that's happening. That's a little bit extraordinary. You know, certainly NC9 is extraordinary. Apple, I mean, these are all sort of extraordinary events that you might say are coincidental that they're all happening at the same time. But here we are.
Here we are indeed. If you hear something, or if many of those things that you just hinted at, Silent Sam and happenings at the legislature, we're not going to really delve into today on this Friday morning, but you can hear more about those stories, read about them on our website at WUNC.org. Perhaps we'll sprinkle in some of that stuff as part of our conversation. But let's begin with Apple. We got news, really, a lot of us got news when we woke up on Thursday morning that Apple had made the decision to take this mega campus to Austin, Texas, 6,000 jobs, I believe, more than $1 billion of investment and expansion. And this is something that North Carolina was vying for. State legislators had, increased the amount of incentives that could be doled out per job in recent weeks as an effort to attract Honeywell. And in longer times back, in recent weeks and months, they've adjusted state law to try to lure Apple here. That did not happen, and there are a number of different directions we can take this. But let's just start with your reaction when you found out that Apple was not coming here. Were you surprised, and what did you, initially make of it yesterday, Thursday morning?
Well, I was honestly surprised, and I think a lot of people were, and that actually sort of speaks volumes. You mentioned the early morning announcement. It's not uncommon for publicly traded companies to make early morning announcements because they want to get the news out before the opening bell. This was even taking that into account, this was a very early announcement. And I think what actually potentially even speaks more volumes is that seemingly everybody in North Carolina, you know, even all the way up through to the governor, were blindsided. I mean, it's fair to say blindsided by this announcement that North Carolina wasn't even on any of the lists. And so in some way, that speaks volumes about what Apple thought of us. Look, I think everybody sort of knew that Amazon was not going to come to North Carolina. At the end of the day, that is a major, major project that needed to be split over the two of the four biggest cities in the country. So no big surprise there. But Apple, I mean, I think we had a pretty good shot at that. Not only is Tim Cook have relations, I mean, obviously he graduated from Duke, right? But there's other connections to Raleigh from top executives. So I think it really is fair to say that people were blindsided. You know, so The question now is, look, we basically threw our best shot at this top company, so what happens next? You know, why weren't we good enough? There's a little bit of soul searching now, I think, amongst a lot of economic development leaders.
Tim Moore echoed that yesterday. A group of us reporters chatted with the Speaker of the North Carolina House on the floor after they were done with their legislative business for the day. And we asked him, you know, his reaction. He said he was disappointed, as did Senator Berger. We also asked Speaker Moore when he found out. And he said, I found out when the rest of you all found out.
And that is a little surprising. I mean, typically, in some cases, this even leaks out. But I think companies tend to give a little bit of a hint to, the top echelon of leaders, so that they can at least have their joint statements prepared, you know, so that when people like you and me go asking, they at least sort of had you know, a couple hours to think about what they're going to say.
And you sort of
saw that yesterday when I think you were at, like you said, you were at the Capitol building and you started to ask lawmakers and they were like, you know, give me a couple minutes to digest this. We're going to come out with a joint statement. And then you saw, I think it was well noted sort of across the press corps, the very rare joint statement between Governor Cooper and the Republican leadership. So, I really think that actually speaks volumes. Not to mention the fact that, okay, Austin got the main giant, $1 billion investment, but there were, I think, five other smaller either expansions or even new investments that were going to be made, across a number of different states. You know, Pittsburgh, Culver City. I mean, these are cities that Raleigh is in great competition with, and one might argue is, you know, potentially better looking. And look, they already said we were a finalist. Okay, we didn't get the main one, but we didn't even get chosen for one of the five or six smaller ones.
Right.
I mean, that really speaks volumes.
So to expound a little bit, just a little bit more context on what you're just talking about, Austin gets the big haul, right? Several thousand jobs, $1 billion. But then Apple also announced that it's going to add 1,000 employees each in Culver City, California, Seattle, and San Diego. Consider that perhaps the silver level or the second level. And then beyond down that, you've got New York, Pittsburgh, Boulder, Colorado, and I believe Portland, Oregon as well, going to see hundreds of new workers. So, you know, if there were a medal stand here, North Carolina is not on it. And this is part of a larger pattern. I want to do a little bit of just broader context here and then get you to weigh in on it. At that very top tier, we have companies like Apple and Toyota and Amazon. And there was a big one that chose Wisconsin, and we should note, with a massive incentives offering. I believe it was in 2017, called Foxconn. The state has missed out on all of those. At the same time, in recent months, Advanced Auto Parts has moved its corporate headquarters here. Honeywell, a Fortune 100 company, has moved its headquarters here, moving, I believe, it's 700-plus jobs to Charlotte. There was a furniture manufacturer, Pollywood, which announced it was almost 400 jobs coming to, I believe, Person County back in October. Those are all significant announcements, but there does seem to be an inability thus far to step into that top tier. What's your theory as to why? And when I say top tier, I mean top tier of
yep.
job expansion projects.
And I completely agree with what you're saying. And it should be noted that, you know, the jobs announcements, the big expansions that we're getting are nice. I mean, those are not to be downplayed.
You just ticked off
2,000 jobs maybe or something of that nature.
Sure, roughly speaking.
And yeah, Fortune 100 and another Fortune 500. So, you know, I mean, these are significant companies. But, you know, and you'll remember maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we lost General Electric. And then there's also the fact to be made that whenever companies from the Raleigh area or really from North Carolina are part of a merger or acquisition, we are always the acquired company and rarely the acquirer. You know, right now IBM is acquiring Red Hat. Red Hat is probably one of the, you know, most proudly homegrown companies that we have. A close second or maybe first on that list is Quintiles, which was spun out of UNC, you know, 30 years ago. That was acquired by IMS Health, and now they're calling the company IQVIA, saying that it's a joint headquarters, but that's really not the case. I mean, the main headquarters is up in the Northeast, and so we're seeing this over and over where Raleigh and really all of North Carolina is sort of always the bridesmaid, never the bride, when it comes to these massive, you know, big-time, big-name companies, and it really raises the question of what is it that we're lacking? I mean, you know, a lot of people have pointed to things like HB2 or, you know, voting rights measures that have, one might argue, set the state back in terms of a, you know, voting rights perspective. But if you look at, look, it's not like Texas is a bastion of human rights, right? I mean, like they're also in the South, and there's also pretty strict voting laws there.
They've just gotten through major litigation as it pertains to voter ID, and they also had a bathroom debate. They didn't carry the bill or a piece of legislation all the way through, but they've had some very controversial social measures. So, yes, to your point, we're not comparing Rhode Island to North Carolina here. We're comparing Texas to North Carolina. There are a lot of similarities when we talk about the social elements of policy. So I do wonder if you know that's getting played up too much in some of this. I mean, this critique of, oh, it's because of the political climate in North Carolina. I mean, Texas isn't some socialist utopia or something, right? I mean,
no, far from it, right? I mean, and look, I think that's one of the things that is a factor when companies are making their decisions, but, you know, it certainly is pretty low on the list. So, of course, then you turn your eye to tax incentives, which is, you know, becoming a bigger and bigger topic, particularly here in North Carolina. I mean, we offered, what, $2 billion to Amazon to come here? And again, maybe that was never going to happen, but that is a significant chunk of change that we're offering to a corporate, you know, resident here that I don't know that it's necessarily going to pay for itself. I mean, you have economists growingly say that, especially at the level of tax incentives that states are offering companies, that you're not actually getting the return on the investment. I mean, you're really draining what, you know, the reserves that you have to pay for, certainly roads, but schools, very important, police, fire, these kinds of other services. You know, you add 5,000 or 10,000 jobs, you have to pay for, you know, where are the kids going to go to school? Where are they going to live? How are they going to get to work? Again, police and fire. I mean, trash pickup. I mean, the list goes on and on. And so there's really an argument to be made that these tax incentives, you know, don't even pay for themselves. But now we're finding that maybe they don't even work to attract the top companies. But now we have these giant tax incentive plans. And so then in some ways we're overpaying for the mid-level companies, if you will, or that's maybe not mid-level, but that second tier company, the Honeywells, you know, the Advance Autos. I was thinking about this last night. It's almost like a mid-market NBA team, even say Charlotte, for instance. I think it's likely that Charlotte won't be able to keep Kemba Walker, but so then they have to give a max contract to the Nick Batums of the world. And I wonder if North Carolina and Raleigh in particular is doing the same thing with these economic incentives, where we are making these high-end offers to the Amazons and Apples. They don't come, but then we've already established at the legislative level that we want to give giant corporate tax breaks to incent companies to come here. And then now we're offering these giant packages to the Honeywells and the Advance Autos of the world. And I don't know, the question of do they pay for themselves is I think, a good one to ask.
Jason DeBruin is on Twitter at Jason, JasonDeBruin, and made just a couple of random basketball references there. First time name. I think we haven't heard Petunias on the podcast before. I don't think that name has come up. So I'm glad we're able
wouldn't
to
be surprised.
Glad
probably
we're able,
will be the last.
Probably will be the last until we get to the lightning round. I'm glad you were able to work that in here. I want to ask you from a political standpoint, if this continues for another year or two of big manufacturer, whether it's a car manufacturer or a tech giant or a pharmaceutical, whatever it is, if these top tier expansions continue to play out and North Carolina doesn't land one, we're getting speculative here. Who does it hurt more? Because the governor is relatively new, right? He's only been around 2 years. Speaker Moore has been at the helm for 4 years. Phil Berger has been at the helm for 8 years. And we talk about that political criticism. Does the governor start to wear a little bit more of the critique of why North Carolina has not landed some of these, in your opinion?
Yeah, maybe. But the bigger point, I think, to make on the political side is that we are going to have other wins. We are going to get companies, you know, that are even Fortune 500 companies to move their headquarters here, particularly as we continue to offer these very generous tax incentive plans. One of the reasons why these are so popular amongst lawmakers is because in some ways they're using play money to that goes out the door, but then take all the credit for what's coming in the door. So whether a lawmaker offers $1 million, $2 million, $50 million, I mean, at the end of the day, it's partly their money, of course, but it's not really their money. But when the company then says, we're coming to North Carolina, They get to stand up there at the press conference. They get to say, see, it's because of the hard work that we did to attract this company, without ever having to explain, well, okay, the downside is that now this company is going to live here for free for however long, and they're not going to, you know, pay their share for into the social programs. They're not going to pay their share for the schools, and yet we have to hire all these new teachers. So from a political standpoint, I think the positive is just so much louder, because you can put out the press release of look who came. You can stand up, you know, at the microphone and say, hey, we brought this company. Certainly there are people who are then hired who you can point to and say, hey, this is a great thing. You know, we brought this job here. On the negative side, after this week, or call it next week, like, it's sort of a little bit of a footnote. Oh, but we didn't get Apple. There's no way to point to a non-job, if that makes any sense. It's not like I can say, oh, you know, Harry Smith doesn't have a job specifically because Apple chose not to come here. So I think the political positives just so far outweigh the political negatives that you're going to continue to see this as politicians increasingly live in a, you know, shortened time frame, the continuous campaign that we've talked about now for the last decade or so. So politically speaking, yes, there is some fallout, no doubt, but it's only insofar as, you know, until the next big company or big-ish company decides that it wants to move and or expand here. And at that time, you know, whenever the governor goes back on the campaign, hey, look at all these companies we brought. You know, when legislators go back on their campaign, look at all the jobs that we brought to this district. Well, that's because of the hard work I did and my colleagues did, partly with tax incentives. So there is going to be some political fallout, sure, but I think it's much smaller than the political positives from companies, even if they're smaller, that do decide to come.
A necessary evil, as it's been called by a lot of different folks, these tax incentives. And I would be remiss if I didn't note there are groups, interestingly enough, as you get further and further away from the middle, groups like the John Locke Foundation, groups like NC Policy Watch, that have for a long time come out against these tax incentives. And I think there are some folks on the right and on the left who are not particularly sad when Amazon announces it is receiving $2 billion and going elsewhere. Elsewhere, when Apple announces that it is not going to come to North Carolina because of the cost associated with that. So just a little bit more context on some of the incentives.
No, I totally agree. Yep. And it makes some strange bedfellows, as you mentioned, the Justice Center and the Locke Foundation. I mean, are they aligned on anything else? I mean, probably not.
They are. There's one other thing that at least comes to mind, and that's independent redistricting. That they are bedfellows on.
But the point remains, they are not aligned on many things, right?
Of course.
And, you know, this quote-unquote necessary evil, you know, we hear that all the time. Well, a necessary evil by who? I mean, the lawmakers are the ones that are offering these, and they're complaining about lawmakers in other states offering the incentives. Well, the lawmakers across all states could all stop offering incentives, right? I mean, it's a necessary evil, you say that, but is it really? I mean, I think sometimes we need to question these sort of
well, it's part of the market. I mean, the train is off, it's running, and it's not coming back anytime soon. All right, a few more minutes here on the podcast. Let's go from Apple and the non-jobs jobs announcement elsewhere to the 9th congressional race, where there were more developments this week. Tip of the cap to WSOC Television, Joe Bruno, who's been all over this story, WECT Television out of Wilmington. It's been, I think, if nothing else, one of the positives from this story has been just the reminder of the importance of local journalism, the importance of reporters on the ground, and trying to connect the dots and figure out what is happening in something that is so central to our democracy, which are hopefully fair and free elections. And also a tip of the cap to Amy Gardner, who we talked about on the podcast last week with Kirk Ross. She is a former NNO reporter. She's been writing for The Washington Post on this. I'm just going to read the opening paragraph from her story that came last night, and we're going to get you to respond to it as we just touch briefly on this 9th congressional race. North Carolina congressional candidate Mark Harris directed the hiring of a campaign aide now at the center of an election fraud investigation, according to three individuals familiar with the campaign, despite warnings that the operative may have used questionable tactics to deliver votes. That's not a major paragraph in the sense that, like, oh, Mark Harris is done forever. Mark Harris did something criminal. But that's a step in the wrong direction if you're Mark Harris or an ally of Mark Harris, right?
Well, I might go further. I mean, it clearly says that according to these three people, and again, I should note, look, I haven't done any independent reporting on this particularly, but if this is to be believed, then Mark Harris did direct somebody to do something illegal. Maybe Mark Harris didn't do it himself exactly, but if a candidate directs an individual to do something that the candidate knows is illegal, I mean, that's a big deal.
I said on Twitter last night, I'm going to paraphrase it here, but over the course of the last handful of days, week plus, a number of people who are close to this, who are smart, who have reported on it, said to me, McCrae Dowless, who's the operative at the center of this thing, who has worked for Democratic and now Republican candidates, he was convicted of tax fraud a while back. He went to jail for 6 months for inappropriately gaining from a death benefit from somebody. I mean, best we can tell, he's a con man to some degree. I don't think that's an inflammatory way to describe him, at least in part. But a lot of smart people have said to me, McCrae Dowless is going to prison. There's no question about it. It's just a matter of for how long. And I think that's a reasonable assessment of where we are at with this thing. But I have kind of felt like, all right, let's let this thing play out. Because if he has evidence, or if he has a recording, or if, I mean, and I'm playing Law and Order here a little bit, but what could he offer to a prosecutor? Could he flip, or could he give someone up of greater stature, of greater importance? And that's one of the things I was reminded of when I read the story from The Washington Post last night. I mean, who could he implicate? And I know you don't have the answer to that question, but I just want to make that point.
Well, no, absolutely. But to your point, he could implicate Mark Harris.
Right. I mean, maybe yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. He could implicate Mark Harris, or he could implicate an elected official. And if we're being honest, that's a bigger get for the investigation, for an effort to bring back fair elections, and to also take down someone of not take down a low level operative, if we're just being frank about it, right?
Well, no, and look, I mean, there are some parallels to what we're seeing between the president and Michael Cohen. I mean, Michael Cohen, we now know as established fact, right, paid hush money to benefit the campaign of Donald Trump. And we're now learning, because of the charges and allegations brought against Michael Cohen, that according to him, the now president knew about it. Well, you could see something very similar play out in North Carolina 9. I mean, if McCrae Dowless is charged and ultimately convicted of what we believe to be election fraud, and then as part of his, you know, sentencing memo or whatever, he says, well, I was directed to do this specifically by Mark Harris or somebody in the campaign. I mean, that could have major implications for, well, really not only Mark Harris, but potentially the entire Republican Party here in North Carolina.
Jason DeBruin on the line from Chapel Hill. Just a couple of quick ones to get you out of here on. Your Panthers play next Monday night against the Saints at home. If there is a chance in the world for them to make the playoffs, obviously they need to win this one against perhaps the best team in the NFC. Your guy Cam Newton has been brutal during this. It's a 5-game or 6-game losing streak? It's 5-game losing streak, right?
It's 5 now. Yeah, they were 6-2, and now they're 6-7.
Yeah, he's been bad. I mean, we don't have to get into all that, but he's been bad. Cam Newton over under 20 incompletions and 2 interceptions on Monday night. What do you think?
Oh, definitely under. Now, I'd like to also,
under 20 incompletions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Under 2 interceptions.
Over the completions, under the interceptions.
No, those are—
First of all, the Saints defense isn't that great, but I'd like to, while you're giving me some over-unders, he's already gone over what the Vegas line was for his touchdown passes, not passes plus runs, touchdown passes for the year, and he has not yet reached the yardage mark, but that's only because there's 3 games left. There's a outside chance that he'll get it with 2 games to spare. So you say that he's played poorly, and he has. I think we're going to find out that he had a shoulder injury. But it's not like he's playing historically bad here. I mean, he still has outpaced already by a long shot what the Vegas odds makers had him going at the beginning of the season.
Are you an apologist or a fanatic of Cam Newton?
Can you be both? I don't know. I mean, I'm a major Cam Newton fan. I love the guy.
One drink that you're drinking this time of year, holiday season, alcohol or not, that you do not drink any other time of the year?
Well, eggnog. I mean, I think that's sort of the obvious one. And I'll admit, I like eggnog both with alcohol and without. So I'm a big eggnog fan. I know there's not a lot of us, but I like the way it tastes, especially around Christmas time.
A president of the 45 in our country's history who you have not read a biography on, but you would like to one day read a book on or learn a lot more about?
Lyndon Johnson. I think that's probably an answer for a lot of people, but he's one of those guys that I think I'd really like to delve into one of those, I don't know, giant three-part biographies that I haven't done yet, but really would like to.
I have not done that yet, but the 36th president had, if memory serves, the House, the Senate, and a favorable U.S. Supreme Court, and he passed as much significant legislation as almost any other president in U.S. history, so a lot to read about with LBJ.
Sure, and apparently able to whip votes more than almost anybody else in history, or at least modern history.
We'll leave it there for now. Jason DeBruin, data reporter for WUNC on Twitter at Jason DeBruin, DeBruyn. Jason, thanks for coming back on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Protests in Chapel Hill taking place in recent days. This is pertaining to Silent Sam and the new location for the divisive Confederate monument. You can hear Jason's reporting, find his reporting on our website, WUNC.org. Of course, if you don't subscribe to the podcast, that's your mistake. You should. Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is you get your on-demand listening. We'll be back with you next week. Have a good weekend. For Jason, I'm Jeff.